Our next paper is titled Uncovering the Faded Traces of Faded Love, which explores the origins and history of Bob Wills' iconic song, Faded Love. The presenter is Joe Weed. Joe produces music and video at his Highland Studios near Los Gatos, California. He has released 6 albums of his own, produced many projects for independent artists and labels, and does soundtracks for film, television, and museums. Joe's composition, Hymn to the Big Sky, was heard in The Dust Bowl, a film by Ken Burns, which premiered on PBS in 2012. Guitar Player and Acoustic Guitar magazines have named his productions Best of the Year and Best of the Decade, respectively. And now I present Joe Weed.
I'm going for Best of the Millennium. Thank you. Raise your hand if you are an audio professional. Okay, raise your hand if you work with audio. Okay. Surprising that here at ARSC, first of all, thanks to JR for taking care of all of our needs with given the primitive materials he has to work with, starting with our content. Am I showing up? Oh, good, we are. Okay. Let me just start with a little overview here. This is a map that will help you understand a little bit of what happens in Bob Wills' life. Bob Wills wrote Faded Love. Bob Wills was born in Kasi, which is in, it's got a little magical triangle of the birthplace of country music. Waco, Kasi, the whole West Texas where they had that god-awful explosion 2 years ago. Thanks. With all the Czechs and Bohemians, the biggest Polish settlement in Texas, Bremont, just down here. These places are all within 30 miles of each other. The town of Westphalia, for which the Westphalia Waltz was named, less than 30 miles from Waco. So there, Bob Wills is born here in 1905, and when he's about 8 or so, they move up here to Turkey, Texas. That is a really long way. And it took them months to do the move. So let's just get a little overview here. I want to show you, with the help of the locals, I found the house where Bob Wills was born. It's not really a house anymore. There's just some stones and bricks. The chimney's still there and the well is still there. And then last fall, I was able to find the house that they lived in out near Turkey, which the locals thought was gone. And so I'm going to show you some of those houses and show you a little bit of the land between the rivers where Bob Wills lived and where he learned to fiddle from his father and uncles and grandfather.
As I look at the letters that my host you wrote to me, it's you that I am thinking of.
He's a fiddler, he's a young
as
man.
I read the lines that
Will's
we were so sweet, I remember our faded love.
A little rap. Little background. One of the reasons I wanted to thank JR and remove any culpability from JR is because of the P issue, and I'll do my best to not explode the P's while we talk. But you would think at ARSC, of all conferences, we could have stereo audio. Who wants stereo audio here besides me? Okay? It's not JR. He's doing great. You'd think at ARSC we could have a pop filter. So, page one. A few years ago, I was preparing to play a gig. I'm a fiddle player. I was preparing to play a gig with Monty Mills, who leads a traditional country band in Central California. Monty loves old classic country music and especially tunes that feature the fiddle. He wanted me to help train a new young fiddler who was playing with the band, so I thought I would listen to Johnny Gimble's Faded Love and show that to her. I dug out my old Johnny Gimble CD, still fiddling around. There's Johnny. It's MCA Records. You can read the numbers or I can tell you later. I looked on the back of the CD tray, however, and I couldn't find Faded Love. But I remembered hearing that tune on that record and liking Gimble's playing on it. Curious, I glanced more closely at the tune listings and decided to give Nellie Gray a try. Gimble's electrified fiddle, five-string fiddle, began what sounded to me just like Faded Love until the B section. You might call that the chorus. When the band went to the dominant chord and the melody changed. The arrangement had a familiar ring to it, though. The tune started in D, where it lays nicely on the fiddle, and after the first A and B parts, the band played D, D sharp, and E chords, setting up a modulation to A. That's what I remembered hearing on Bob Wills' original recording of Faded Love, a fiddle intro in D, followed by the same D, D sharp, and E changes to modulate to A for the singers. Here's Johnny. That's where we're different. That's the dominant back. Thanks, dear. So I was struck by how much the fiddle work in Nellie Gray reminded me of Faded Love. The modulations, the same fiddle ornaments, the same tempo and feel. I wondered if this were Johnny's way of getting Faded Love onto the album without having to pay the mechanical royalties. But then I realized he might be telling us something else, something about Faded Love and Nellie Gray, and about his own long career as one of the premier fiddlers in country music. Several years later, I asked Johnny about Nellie Gray. "That's one of the first tunes I ever played on fiddle," he told me. "My brother Bill taught it to me. We played it all the time. It was really popular at dances." Johnny's from Northeast Texas. "The first time Bob Wills played Faded Love for me, I thought he was playing Darling Nellie Gray," Johnny told me in another interview last October. I asked him if he still remembered the Faded Love recording session, feeling that he probably would. Gimble's memory has proved remarkably accurate regarding names, places, dates from over 60 years. I've asked him about a lot of things over the years. "I sure do. It was 1950 in California. Bob played fiddle on it, and Keith," this is Keith Coleman, "and I played the backgrounds. We played the modulation for the vocal, you know. Rusty MacDonald sang the melody." Bob Wills in his Texas, well, let's actually have a little picture of Bob up here. So here's the one that Charles Townsend used for the cover of the book. Here's one when Bob was shooting movies in California. Bob Wills and his Texas Playboys recorded Faded Love for MGM at Radio Recorders in Hollywood, California on April 27, 1950. Perhaps honoring the man who taught him to fiddle, Wills copyrighted the tune in both his own name and that of his father, John Tompkins Wills. Or maybe there is something deeper in that shared copyright. Given that Nellie Gray was still quite popular when Bob Wills was born, 49 years after it was first published by Oliver Ditson in 1856, it's quite likely that he learned the piece from his father so that they could play it at the many country dances around Lakeview and Turkey, Texas, where the family lived and worked on a small farm after about 1921. Will's father, Uncle John, as he was known to the family, his grandfathers and uncles were all legendary fiddlers, and fiddles provided the bulk of the entertainment in rural West Texas in the early 20th century. As I began looking into the roots of Faded Love, I thought I might be seeing a process that has happened many times in vernacular music. In fact, this is an important part of the dynamism and the generational identity that propels vernacular music. It seemed to me that Bob Wills had taken a tune he and his family had played for many years and which people knew and frequently requested, and he had updated it and added lyrics and given it a new name. His brother Billy Jack, as Tom Diamant probably knows, is credited as the lyricist on the tune. I decided to try and track Nellie Gray from the original Ditz and Sheet music in 1856 and see if I could find published music and recorded examples to show its widespread popularity. This would also show the originality in Will's work, I thought, his making a new piece out of the popular old song, which had continued to be part of American life throughout the Civil War and on through the settling of the West. Through the helpful contributions of a couple of Texas musicians, I learned a few things that surprised and delighted me, and they showed me that Wills wasn't alone in creating Faded Love from the echoes of the crumbling sheet music and broadsides of Nellie Gray. Looking further, I discovered that I may not have been seeing in Benjamin Hanby's Darling Nellie Gray the actual beginning of the tunes changing and adapting over time. When he composed Darling Nellie Gray, Hanby may very well have been doing pretty much the same thing that the Wills family did. Hanby died young, and although he did contribute another piece to the American Songbook, Up on the Housetop, published by George F. Root in Chicago, the rest of his legacy is small and short, and I hadn't seen any study connecting Nellie to any previous musical sources. Hanby, however, may have been standing on the shoulders of another writer whose song, Maggie May, was already in wide circulation, certainly in Great Britain and the eastern seaboard of the United States. In fact, anywhere that sailors might go and sing for recreation or let off steam after long months at sea. The question of how and when Maggie May might have reached Hanby, I'll leave for another study. But the coincidence of words and melody is just too close to ignore. Here's Hanby's Darling Nellie Gray, Jer.
Poor Nellie Gray, they have taken you away, and I'll never see my darling anymore.
Okay, that's...
I am sitting by the river.
Sorry.
And I'm weeping all the day.
It's Bradley Kincaid.
For you've gone from the old Kentucky shore.
Okay, there's Bradley Kincaid singing Nellie Gray. Let's listen to... The Folksoul, what are these guys called? It's Paul Clayton and the Folksoul Singers doing a version of Maggie May.
Taking you away to dwell upon my demon's cruel shore. Cause you robbed many a whaler and many a drunken sailor, and now you'll never cruise around Liverpool anymore.
Thanks. I should have actually given JR a little bit more pre-roll for that. The first words are the same, just the name is different. So the story that the Hanby family told about Benjamin's song sounds quite plausible and is largely backed up by physical evidence. The following account comes from two places, if you're taking notes. Number one is an unattributed brochure offered for sale at the Hanby House, no longer, which is now managed by the Westerville Historical Society and with help from the Ohio Historical Society for the deep pockets. And number two, a biography of Hanby written by his son, B.O. Hanby. I obtained a scanned version of the biography in October of last year from Jim Allen, the manager of the Hanby House. Benjamin Hanby's father, William Hanby, in addition to holding other offices, was a minister and a bishop for the Church of the United Brethren of Christ in Westerville, Ohio, about 13 miles north of Columbus. Before living in Westerville, the family had lived in Rushville, about 50 miles to the south, much closer to the Ohio River. In both towns, William Hanby operated in his home a station on the Underground Railroad. So apparently in 1842, when Benjamin was a child, a boy of 8 or 9, an escaped slave named Joseph Selby reached Rushville on his underground trip to Canada, where he hoped to earn enough money to buy the freedom of his wife. Selby, perhaps suffering from ill health after the long and perilous journey, died before he could reach Rushville and was buried in the local ceremony. In the local cemetery. Catch me on those. So by 1856, when Hanby was 23, he was attending Otterbein College in Westerville. The family says that his tune, which shows up at this time, commemorates the life and misfortunes of Shelby and his mate. was first performed at the Family Parlor in one of their many musical gatherings in that house. Hamby dedicated the song to his music teacher, Cornelia Walker, who suggested that he send it to a publisher, and Hamby sent the manuscript to Oliver Ditson in Boston. He didn't hear back from Ditson and assumed that the tune hadn't been accepted for publication. But eventually, this is Joe Selby the slave. This is his grave down in Rushville, just before the rains unleashed. Eventually, his sister Anna came home and told him she'd heard his song sung at a reception. Ditson had indeed published it and had even registered the copyright in the company's name. The tune soon became quite popular, and Ditson made big money from sheet music sales. Hamby contacted Ditson and asked for the customary composer's royalties. Ditson, the story goes, wrote back that Hamby got the fame, they got the money, and that was the way things worked. Hamby then obtained the services of an attorney who negotiated a one-time payment by Ditson of $100 and kept half. Welcome to the music business. Excuse me, Tim, nothing, it was actually about Ditson. Supposedly, Ditson also sent Hamby 12 free copies of the music, thus completing Hamby's compensation for writing Darling Nellie Gray. The story about the attorney and the settlement may be apocryphal. The people I spoke with at the Hamby house have never seen the letter, and it's not among any of Hamby's retrievable papers at the site. The story does appear, however, in his son's biography, in the son's biography of Benjamin. To make the connection between Hamby's Darling Nellie Gray and Bob Wills' Faded Love, I wanted to pursue two avenues. First, I wanted to see how popular Nellie Gray had become. Was it likely that poor rural farmer, rancher, musicians, cotton pickers who moved around 1913 from Cossie, Texas, to remote West Texas would know the tune? And was it likely that they would find an audience for it? I also wanted to find out what the Wills family said about the tune, so I planned to visit with Charles Townsend, the author of San Antonio Rose, The Life and Music of Bob Wills, published 1976, University of Illinois Press, edited by our dear friend Judy McCullough. As you all know, Thomas Edison invented the phonograph in 1877, just 21 years after Ditson first published Nellie Gray. Once the commercial development and widespread distribution of phonograph records changed forever the way Americans would hear and learn music, Darling Nellie Gray showed up again and again and again as a favorite of both recording artists and the public. I've compiled here a short, incomplete list of commercial recordings of Darling Nellie Gray that were released between the advent of commercial recording and Bob Wills' 1950 recording of Faded Love.
There's a low green valley by the old Kentucky shore, where I've whiled many happy hours away. Just a-sitting and a-singing by the little cabin door, where lived my darling Nellie Gray. When the moon had climbed the mountains and the stars were shining too, I'd take my darling Nellie Gray.
This is Mac Wiseman. And you knew that, Dick. I'm going to skip the sheet music slideshow because in the interest of time. Laura Ingalls Wilder, in fact, wrote in The Little House in the Big Woods, in the Christmas chapter, that her father, Pa Ingalls, fiddled Darling Nellie Gray to help Laura fall asleep on Christmas Eve. So the song was clearly out there, much loved and frequently distributed via oral, written, and recorded means. I felt it was pretty clear that Darling Nellie Gray would be a likely candidate for a fiddle band to play at Saturday night dances in rural West Texas. But what about the Wills family? What did they say about Faded Love? Uncle John, Bob Wills' father, died in 1952. Bob always credited his father as having helped him write the tune, and according to Townsend, the biographer, he had the royalty payments for Faded Love sent directly to his mother until she died. The story that Bob told and that Townsend relates in his book is that Uncle John took an old fiddle tune, changed it, worked with Bob to turn it into Faded Love. I believe the old tune they're referring to was Darling Nellie Gray. But when I interviewed Charles Townsend at his home on October 2nd last year, 2013, the now retired professor and author of San Antonio Rose told me, just as we were finishing the interview, that
it'll give a little spice to your
okay.
And that, if you got it on,
yeah.
And that is that I don't agree that Faded Love was a takeoff on My Darling Nellie Gray. I'm sure there may be some similarity, but I never could see it. But as the author of this book, I wanted to make that clear. Anyway, Joe, thank you so much for including me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
There we have it. Townsend's book is a valuable trove, really, of information about Wills, his musicians, his family, and his career, but it's not a completely objective scholarly study. Today, perhaps even more than when he wrote the biography, Townsend feels a strong personal debt and deep admiration for Bob Wills. Wills clearly did what many of our greatest and most successful vernacular musicians have done, including A.P. Carter, Bill Monroe, Woody Guthrie, and others. I believe that Townsend was simply trying to protect Wills' reputation and stress his honesty, and felt that if he acknowledged that Wills' writing of Faded Love was a reworking of an existing song rather than an original undertaking, it would somehow diminish Wills' stature as a national icon. He even struggles with that in his book. I'm going to move on from that. What about those helpful Texas musicians I mentioned earlier? Jazz mandolinist Paul Glass. See if we've got Paul in here, who lives in Austin, told me that Louise Rowe, who lives in Euless, Texas, that's up between Dallas and Fort Worth, had performed with Bob Wills on the Texas Playboys and was the only woman to both sing and play with Bob Wills and the Playboys. I met her at the Texan Kitchen, a restaurant and bar in Euless, where she plays still at 81 years old with a Texas fiddle band, a version of the kind of the Texas Playboys. I have to find that picture in a minute. I'm not sure I'm going to pull it up right now. My brothers had a band. Is there a version on there? Yes.
Yeah.
Could you, this is her brothers, can you hit play and keep it down? Same key. Listen. Okay. So my brothers had a band called the Seven Rowe Brothers, Louise told me. They had a theme song they played every night to open and close their shows. They called it Polk County Two-Step, and they played it at every show since the 1930s. It was the melody to Faded Love. She played me the CD. I'll skip over the technical details with the numbering and all that and when it was dated. I have not found a complete and accurate, unquestionable discography to show this that 78 on Talent Records, but I have found one online that showed me the numbers right before it and right after it, and they were all 1949. This sounds right about in that time period for me, too. Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys recorded Faded Love for MGM and radio recorders in Hollywood on April 27, 1950. If I can find independent and reliable documentation of the Seven Rowe Brothers Band having performed or recorded Polk County Two-Step before that 1950 session, then we'll have two completely independent paths leading to a similar B part. Fiddler Johnny Gimble, who was on Will's Faded Love session, may even have told me how that high melody that opens the B part was written. Johnny related to me in Waco, March of 2013. Rusty MacDonald sang the verse. Rusty was a great singer. And the trio, Billy Bowman had been singing the high third on some songs, and Bob says, Billy did that on this song, on the chorus. And then Johnny breaks into, from his wheelchair, exactly on pitch, I miss you, darling, more and more. Can you play Will's Faded Love chorus? There's the next one.
I remember our faded.
Here comes the chorus.
I miss you.
The same thing you just heard the Roe Brothers play on their fiddles. Note for note. It's an octave, it's the first verse raised an octave. I think we can. Yeah, it is. I think we can draw to a close and leave some of the other details to another time.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's so hard to cut off this. This is fascinating. It's so hard to stop, but it is time to move on to the next paper. I know there's a lot of questions, but you can all catch Joe at the end of the panel.